following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 206. I'm Dave Nelson along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Coming up on this episode, the alien megastructure explained. Scientists preparing to send message to Proxima Centauri B, and Chilean government releases an unexplainable UFO sighting video, plus the sighting segment and our picks for the week. Before all that, though, our question.
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
What do you think was the best movie involving extraterrestrial beings? The best movie that you've ever seen involving some form of aliens. Who wants to go first?
Grabbers, because drunk Irish people and aliens.
Oh, yeah, you meant... Boom. That was a pick, wasn't it, for you?
Oh,
it
yes.
was... I don't know. That movie was just a lot of fun.
It was a delightful film.
I never got around to seeing it. I should search that out and watch it.
You need to, Dave.
I wonder if Mrs. Nelson would like that.
I bet you she would.
I think she'd enjoy it.
Okay. I'll propose it. We'll see.
She seems to have the right sense of humor to enjoy that.
I'll bring it to the table and we'll see. We'll vote on it and we'll see what happens. It's just like a subcommittee around here. For the watching of the TV. All right. So your pick is Grabbers.
Yes.
Why is it the best alien movie you've ever seen? Besides Drunk Irishman.
I enjoy the humor that it has because you end up with a lot of alien movies. I mean, I guess there's like Galaxy Quest and whatnot, which would be up there. But to me, like a lot of the movies that involve aliens, extraterrestrials, they're very serious, like serious business, you know, like, oh, there's this alien and he's, he's abducting people or destroying cities or whatever, doing these crazy experiments. And yes, it is kind of a horror movie, but there's more of a lighter side to it. Mm-hmm. So even though the aliens don't necessarily have the humor, then like the people around them make the situation not so much enjoyable.
No, I know where you're going with this, Anessa.
It's like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's they make a dire situation less heavy.
Kind of like, what's the zombie movie with Scotty?
Oh, you mean
Shaun
of the Dead. I couldn't think of the actor's name or the film. Jesus.
It's like with Scotty. Who plays Scotty? Okay. To go through different Scotties. And so, no, something kind of like that.
Yeah.
So, but
it's a ridiculous
Grabbers, probably
ridiculous situation. Things are funny. I understand. Okay.
But not being overly funny, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so Brad, let's move on to you. Best movie involving extraterrestrials you've ever seen?
I'm going to go with the original Alien.
Yes. And why is that?
The atmosphere of horror was... kept me on the edge of my seat the entire time I watched it, so... it's still one of my all-time favorites.
Okay. Little off-putting? Makes you uncomfortable a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Part of the terror was in your mind.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Have you watched it since you found out about the whole chest-bursting scene and the actors not knowing that was going to happen? Have you seen it since you found that out?
I have not. And now I definitely want to watch it again with that in mind.
And I think you almost have to watch the whole thing. You can't just watch the scene.
Oh, no. Nope.
Yeah.
Now you got to get into the frame of mind.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to go with Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
No, there you go.
Because it was one of the first alien movies I'd ever seen. Like, I had seen Star Trek, like the Star Trek original series. Wait a second. Did Close Encounters come out before Star Wars or after Star Wars? It was after.
After Star Wars.
So I would have seen Star Wars, and I would have seen a lot of Trek. And Battlestar Galactica obviously was on TV. So I think it was the first, like, I don't know, a movie that was a big production that dealt with not like fictional out in space science fiction aliens, but real world aliens coming to our planet type thing.
Yep.
And it was so just the lighting and the sound and the music and the acting. It's got everything. So I'm going to vote for Close Encounters and lots of mashed potatoes.
This means something.
In the news.
This is a follow-up to a story that we had a number of episodes ago where we spoke of the possibility of an alien megastructure like a Dyson sphere or something like that. As a kind of a reminder for folks, a Dyson sphere is something that is a theorized structure that would be built around a star to gather as much power from it as possible, solar heat, whatever. And that's considered like the ultimate evolution of a civilization to be able to draw, pretty much power directly from their sun. It turns out that may not be the case for that star that we had talked about. Now, this star, and the reason why there was such a hubbub about it is because the star seemed to have things transit in front of it. So the brightness of the star varied greatly, which is usually a sign of an exoplanet or something else. So let's get into it. A new paper from Columbia University suggests that Tabby's star, which is the star we're talking about, the celestial object voted most likely to host an alien megastructure, is acting weirdly because it recently annihilated an entire planet.
Whoa.
And the shattered remains of that planet are now producing strange flickering effects. It's probably the best theory we've heard so far. It's not aliens.
No.
At least that's the conclusion reached by a trio of astronomers from Columbia's Departments of Physics and Astronomy. Rather, the scientists say that the slow dimming of Tabby's star, along with its bizarre and dramatic dips in light, sometimes as much as 22%, are likely the result of a celestial collision involving the star and one of its planets. Now, the star is officially titled KIC 84628528675309. I threw in that last bit, sorry. Colloquially known as Tabby's star, so we'll try to stick to that.
That sounds like that totally sounds like a Star Trek planet.
It does.
Because wasn't there like a planet, like it was somebody's planet? Okay, go ahead. I'm going to find it, and I'll get back to you. Hang on.
Okay. Tabby's star is a fairly standard star as far as most things go, but its strange behavior has infuriated and confounded astronomers over the past year. Kepler data, now this is the Kepler satellite that we've been using to... It's a telescope. That is being used to catalog exoplanets and do more celestial studies. Kepler data revealed the star's odd flickers in 2015, but a subsequent survey deepened the mystery by showing that the star's brightness faded by 14% from 1890 to 1989. And another 3% during the 4 years that Kepler scanned it. Such behavior is unprecedented and frankly very hard to explain. Now, a number of theories were thrown out, including comet swarms, it being an elongated star, a planetary collision, and of course the alien megastructure. The trouble is, none of these theories can explain the double whammy of anomalies, i.e. the odd short-term flickers and the gradual long-term dimming. The new theory by Metzger and his colleagues does just that. Now, here it is. The researchers hypothesize that a planet recently plunged into Tabby's star. The gravitational energy produced by the collision would have boosted the star's normal nuclear energy production, causing it to brighten rapidly and then slowly decay over time. If this idea is correct, then we happen to be observing Tabby's star as it returns to its normal level of luminosity.
I totally knew that. You didn't have to tell me that. I figured that out a long time ago.
This theory may also help to explain the star's sudden dips in light. Following the collision, portions of the planet and possibly bits of its moon or moons entered into eccentric orbits. Every time this debris field moves in front of the star, from our vantage point, it appears to flicker. So imagine like a Jupiter-sized planet that we know has more than a dozen moons. Now imagine that slamming into our sun, and now you've got these 12 plus extra celestial bodies that could now be wildly orbiting around the star and will eventually probably crash into the sun as well. So now this disruption, if it were a Jupiter-sized planet like I just threw out there, could have taken place 1,000 years ago in order to explain the rate of dimming observed today. On the other hand, if the object was the size of our moon, then the brightening and dimming would have taken place about a decade ago. Metzger says a collision with a moon-like object probably wouldn't produce the observed century-long dimming, but it could explain the dimming seen during 4 years of Kepler's observations. So, a lot of interesting things going on there. I'm sorry, my screen just jumped and I moved away from the microphone so you can hear me. Sorry about that.
It's okay. So, okay. To confirm again, not aliens.
No. Nope. Actually, Metzger is saying that it didn't happen overnight. The planet may have spent millions of years slowly decreasing its perocenter before it finally impacted the star. In other words, its center of, I believe perocenter is the center of gravity compared to the sun. And the planet was sliding closer to it. And ultimately the star's gravity pulled it in. Now, as it impacted, then it would have caused the brightening and then the slow dimming that we've observed. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. They could test the theory. We would have to find another star that has a planet or moon crash into it and study that. But, you know, you'd have to be at the right place at the right time to observe that. So
let's not and say we did, okay?
Yeah.
Let's pretend.
Let's not attempt that with our own star. But, you know, if we happen to be scanning the universe and find it, perhaps we can see something like this again.
So I really hope this ends the barrage of Facebook links mentioning the alien megastructure. I hope the phrase alien megastructure is not used in relation to this story ever again, because I'm sick of seeing it.
Yep. Hopefully. So at least it feels like we've gotten some closure on that particular story.
That's the final step, right? Closure?
Closure is the thing.
All right. Sounds good. Any final thoughts on this? Brad, Anessa? Anessa, do you have any feedback? Any kind of thoughts? Things? Stuff?
I think everything was pretty much covered.
Alrighty.
Kind of bummer that, you know, it's not aliens, but whatever. Someday
we'll find a planet with, or a star with things floating around it that we think is an alien megastructure, and it will be an alien megastructure.
Yay!
And we'll all rejoice. and throw a party. Huzzah!
Because we've got nowhere to run in terror.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
All right, so what's been going on with you guys the last week? What's been happening? What's new?
Been working to get over this cold, which it's a lot better than it was, but I still have the occasional sniffles and the occasional cough, so boo. Also, I've been working on my temperature blanket. Whoop, whoop.
Okay, explain what a temperature blanket is. I have no idea.
So, essentially, I'm doing it crochet, but you could, you know, knit if you wanted to. But you create a key or a thermometer or whatever, a guide, and you assign colors to temperature ranges. And if a whatever range the temperature for that day falls into gets assigned that color, and you crochet a row. So the blanket, each row is determined by, like, the color is determined by the temperature, like the daily high.
Interesting.
So it's a year-long project.
Sounds like it. Wow. It's a cool little twist on crocheting. I like it.
Yeah. Someone had posted to the social medias, actually, I think it was Instagram, and that she was going to be doing a temperature blanket. And I'm like, ooh, what's that? So then I went to the Googles and I'm like, oh, that looks like fun. So I decided I was going to do a temperature blanket. And then I was telling my coworkers about it. And one of them is going to be doing a temperature blanket. And a friend of mine in Oklahoma is now going to be doing a temperature blanket. So it's going to be interesting seeing temperature blankets from like the Wausau area. And then even just going up the road to Antigo and seeing variations, even though they're close, it's enough to make a difference from where they're located. And then Oklahoma. So yeah, it'll be cool.
In climates in areas of the country or the world where the temperature doesn't really vary that much, it'd be kind of a boring looking blanket.
Yeah. And you can break it down. Like, that's kind of the cool thing, is you can customize the gauge how you want it. Cause the one that I initially had seen, it was like everything 22 degrees and below is one color. And I'm like, half the blanket would be purple in Wisconsin. So I broke it up into 10 degree increments. So, you know, everything negative 11 and below gets a color, and then, you know, negative 10 to 0, and then 1 to 11, and 12 to 22, and so on. They each get different colors. And Brad was like, well, because the highest that I have is 89 degrees and above. He's like, well, what if we end up with 100 degree temperatures? And I'm like, then I'll just buy another ball of yarn. But yeah, for now, 89 degrees and above, then it's just red.
So what about you, Brad? What's been going on with you?
Wow. Editing a lot more episodes of Adventure Party and working towards getting caught up.
Oh, do you want to mention the new direction of the show, or is that still, or shouldn't I have even said anything about
it's
that?
Not a new direction. It would be an extra show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And that would be live plays. It would be us playing a game, starting probably with the White Wolf, the 90s edition rules of Hunters Hunted. So everybody would be playing humans in a world of monsters.
Oh, neat. So, yes. You can find that at gncasts.com/party/adventure.
That would be /adventure. Adventure Party. And I'm still working on the details and assembling the game. So it's going to happen. I'm just putting the pieces together to make it actually coalesce.
And then regular episodes coming out on a regular basis.
Correct.
All right.
While the Chilean government has declassified a video and released a report on an unidentified flying object sighting that occurred over 2 years ago, the 9-minute video was picked up by a Chilean Navy helicopter at an altitude of 1,370 meters, or 4,500 feet, along the coast between the port of San Antonio and Quinteros on November 11, 2014. The helicopter's infrared camera operator detected an unknown object in the distance, which appeared to be flying at a similar speed to the helicopter at around 244 kilometers or 152 miles per hour. Two experienced Navy officers on board also saw the object. According to the Huffington Post, one told the investigation that the object had a, quote, flat, elongated structure with, quote, two thermal spotlights like discharges that did not coincide with the axle of motion. Most bizarre of all, the heat-sensitive infrared cameras show the object appearing to thrust out a plume of an unidentified hot material at least twice. They contacted two radar stations in an attempt to identify the object, neither of which could find it. Before they knew it, the object vanished into the clouds. After 2 years of investigation by a team composed of leading scientists and aviation technicians, the CEFAA, a wing of Chile's aviation agency, appeared to be no closer to solving the mystery than before. In a statement translated by Google, they said, "Some analysts have suggested the hypothesis that it is a medium-sized line aircraft and that the stelae of the detachable element may be the reserve water inside the apparatus thrown by the crew. However, meteorology asserts that neither the altitude at which the object moved nor the ambient temperature of that movement allowed such a wake of condensation. For now, the object remains unidentified." And you can always go to where I found it, was ifls.com, or I fucking love science, because I do. So that's where I found the article.
Great, Anessa. Now I have to go back and take that part out. Thanks.
You're welcome. I bleep lovescience.com. So, yeah. No, it's kind of crazy that... I think it's cool that they took the time to try to figure it out, have their experts look at it, and they weren't really able to say, hey, it's probably this type of aircraft. It's, hey, we don't know what kind of aircraft that was. Here's the video. Like, I don't know that the U.S. government would have done that.
No, you know what? And we've talked about this before, where other governments, even like England, are a lot more open to actually explaining what's going on and like revealing information that they know about possible extraterrestrials.
Right. And I think it's, I don't know, I think it's not cool of the U.S. to be like, we don't know anything, when countries from around the world are saying, hey, check out this video or check out these images. Mm-hmm. We've not been able to identify it. Yeah. They're not saying that it's extraterrestrial, but they're saying they don't know what it is.
I think the U.S. government still has the Cold War mentality where they want to keep everything secret.
Kind of. I'm not going to go into it, but it's a weird mesh of, you still have people in the, or parts of the government that are still in the Cold War mindset, but then you have others that are like, hey, maybe Russia's not so bad. I don't know. It's weird.
Oh,
with everything
hey.
That's going on right now. I'm, you know, it's conflicting. They're like, oh, that's totally not what happened. That's not what went down. We're not even going to worry about Russia. But we've been worrying about Russia for like 50 plus years.
Yeah.
Why are we suddenly not worrying about them?
Yeah, I think most people actually are worried about Russia.
So I'm like, what has changed?
Except for the person that should really worry about Russia. It's not worrying about Russia. Okay. That's all I'm gonna say.
So anyway. Chile. Woo!
All right, so we'll put
unidentified flying objects.
We'll put a link in the show notes, and you can check out the video for yourself, and you can decide for yourself: is it actually a extraterrestrial craft, or just something else,
or somebody's, you know what that something else might be?
Somebody's kite, possibly, or a balloon.
Chewing the water?
A balloon from a birthday party.
Seems legit.
Crazy flying water balloon.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. That's my theory. I'm sticking to it.
Seems legit. If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
This, I think, is a follow-up to something that we talked about before. I could be wrong. I'm not sure. Scientists to send radio signals to closest exoplanet to contact aliens. Well, they should preface that by saying to hopefully contact aliens, because we're not sure if aliens are there. The organization Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence are planning to send powerful, repeated, and intentional messages to Proxima Centauri B, Earth's closest exoplanet, by 2018 to try to initiate communication with potential alien life, METI, who are trying to raise $1 million annually for running the transmitter, would be making the first effort this way to send intentional messages into space. So they're going to be raising, the budget's $1 million a year to run the transmitter for this thing.
Wow.
Interesting.
They're going to need to do some heavy drives to make that happen.
Yeah, I wonder how long they have to pump it out. Like, I wonder what the long-range plan is. Like, over how many years are they planning on sending the message out?
Yeah. Whew.
So the organization also plans to send signals after this project to distant planets, hundreds or thousands of light years away. So they want to make our presence known, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Sounds like it.
They're also going to have a workshop next year to try to figure out how to craft the message to say hello. And I think that's the part where I think we've talked about before. Like how do you say hello? How do you communicate? How do you make first contact with an alien species when you don't know who they are or how they communicate? So that's something that they got to work on.
Yeah. I know that was a big conversation that they had with the Voyagers when they created the gold record.
Mm-hmm.
And the message to put on the gold record. So
that's actually mentioned in this at the very end of this. I'm going to skip ahead. Then I'm going to kind of tail back. No, that's not it.
Okay. double back.
Backtrack. Yeah, double backtrack. Back. Yeah.
There
okay.
you go.
There have been plenty of efforts in the past to contact aliens. In the early 1970s, NASA's Pioneer 10 and 11 spacecraft carried what Brad mentioned, a message in the form of a phonograph record. Also, SETI's Frank Drake sent a radio message that could be assembled into a pictogram of images. More recently, a lot of stuff, including arrhythmic concerts of Vivaldi and Gershwin and the Beatles song Across the Universe, have been sent into the universe using math. That's kind of cool.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
METI has attracted controversy with theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking, as you may recall. He has doubts about if we should make our presence known in the galaxy or in the universe. Do we really want, you know, aliens that could be aggressive, that could want to destroy us or enslave us or do something with us? Do you want them to come? Do we want them to intentionally know we're here and come here and do the thing that they're going to do? That's the question.
Yeah. That's probably something you should think out before you send the message.
See, that's the problem. Like, okay, say we send a message out and it's worded wrong, or if the alien takes it wrong, maybe it sounds aggressive. Maybe it's a challenge and we don't even know it. And they come here thinking that we want to throw down, and that's not the purpose. That wasn't the intent of our message. It's like, dude, hey, we were just saying hello. What's up with the hostility, man?
Yep, there's always a risk that something's going to get lost in translation.
That's true. I was trying
whether
to think
you're
of,
here on planet Earth or millions of miles away.
Yeah. Now, there are some people that support this, like our buddy Seth Shostak, who whenever I hear his name or see it, I think of the...
Sleestak?
The Sleestaks from Land of the Lost.
You too.
He's, of course, senior astronomer at SETI. He's in full support of this project, saying that this way humans will gain a renewed appreciation of what it means to be uniquely human. Well, let's have that positive outlook on things. Let's hope that positivity will continue, and it doesn't turn negative. So, do you guys think this is a good or bad or don't you have an opinion on whether we should do this or not?
That's a very good question. I'm glad you asked that. I think that I think it's dangerous.
Yeah.
I really do. We wouldn't be prepared for something like that if it were to go south. And considering what I feel we saw in our press conference yesterday or the day before, the United States certainly isn't ready for it.
Oh, that press conference.
That actually frightened me.
Yeah, do we want the aliens to come here when that kind of person is a representation of our leader? I don't know. Growly Bear says, seriously, we are talking light years. It would be our great, 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 great grandchildren who would have to answer a message sent today.
Assuming we're still around.
Yeah.
So maybe it's nothing to worry about. You know, maybe we're freaking out over nothing.
Maybe.
Yeah. Or maybe it gets there faster than we think, and they have, you know, a lot faster vehicles, or they figured out a way of traveling through, you know, space-time where they just get here instantaneously. Who knows? I guess that's the risk we take. That's, you know, what are we doing, Brad? We should be inspired by shows like Star Trek, you know, to boldly go where no person's gone before. Let's have that mentality, okay? Let's not be freaked out. Let's embrace the unknowns of the galaxy. And we can be the representation, because we're the Galactic Network, so.
That would be nice. Yeah.
All right, so we'll see what happens with that. Good luck, humanity. If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Brad has a sighting.
All right. I do. In Heartland, Wisconsin.
Ye old home state.
Now, this was reported on the evening of October 26th of 2012. And this took place for about an hour.
Ooh.
Now, the object in question looked like an oval disc when it flew very fast. When you looked at it while it was just hovering, it looked large and long. The UFO had a very bright light on the left end of it. The saucer left. Okay. It got so bright at times that that it looked like the North Star. On the other end was a red pulsating light. It would go get very bright at times, and then go very dim to the point where you almost couldn't see it. Now, they couldn't determine the actual size of it, but at a certain point, it looked like the size of a car. This was in an urban area, which was on the outskirts of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So on the eastern, the southeastern part of the state. There are no military bases or power plants in that particular area. There was a highway right next to the area where they saw it. Okay, so here are the details. And now this is as reported by the observer, the witness of this event.
Can I interject real quick?
Absolutely.
I want to show off my Wisconsin city pronunciation prowess here, okay?
Okay.
So it's right adjacent to Oconomowoc.
Mm-hmm.
Waukesha.
Yep.
West Allis.
Yep.
Pewaukee, yeah. Delafield. It's between all those cities. But it's not...
It would be in that area,
but
yes.
But it's not near... Hang on, let me go back up to Green Bay. One of my favorite city name in Wisconsin. Give me a second. I need to zoom in here to Green Bay. And that would be Ashwaubenon. It's not near Ashwaubenon. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So here are the details. As my mom and I were driving on our way home from the grocery store, my mom suddenly slowed down and pointed up to the sky, saying, "What's that?" When I first looked, I thought it was the northern star because of how bright and big it was.
Fun fact, the northern star is not that bright or big.
True.
Sorry.
Then as I looked towards the right of the object, I noticed a red pulsating light. At first, I thought it was just a plane going fast, but then I realized that it wasn't moving. My mom stopped the car. We just sat there in awe. We were watching it for a good couple of minutes, and I decided to whip out my iPod and film everything we were seeing. As the few minutes went by, the bright light suddenly began to fade immensely. I screamed at my mom, "The light's going away! It's dimming!" And then it started slowly to move to the left. My mom and I began to follow it with our car. All of a sudden, it shot so fast behind a tree that we had to speed up greatly to get in view of it again. When it shot super fast, it looked like a modern-day depiction of a UFO. It was very slim and oval. When we got in view of it again on the other side of the tree, it was now giving off the same bright light that it was giving off when we first saw it. My mom decided to pull up in a little parking area and get closer to it. I was freaking out. I told her no. I was afraid of getting abducted because of all the stories I've read about things like this happening. But my mom was not scared. She was fascinated and in complete awe. As we were watching it, she was telling me, "I have never seen anything like it." As we were sitting there, the UFO was going in all sorts of directions, kind of like it was scanning the area. Then all of a sudden it stopped, and soon enough it started coming towards us. Freaking out and telling my mom, "Go, get out of here, go!" I was literally crying tears of fright. Of freight. But within a few minutes, it began to turn around and slowly turn around and go the opposite direction. The white light began to immensely dim again, but the red light was still pulsating through all of this. At one point, when we were so close to it, it looked as though something was hanging down from it. My mom thinks that maybe it turned, and as we could only see the red light, the white end of the white end light of it was hanging down as it turned. We really are not sure what it was hanging. It was a well-hung UFO. While we were sitting there watching all of this occur, I remember telling my mom a few times, "Look how big it is. It looks like a car." And let me tell you, it was huge. I also remember hearing it when we were very close to it. As it was coming closer, I began to hear it even louder. It sounded like the noise of a helicopter gives out. But the thing was, it was not a helicopter. As it was going the other direction, my mom backed out of the parking space we were in and began to follow it. It was moving at a fairly steady pace at this point. As we were on the street of our house already, my mom stopped the car at the side of the road and we just sat there watching it. The bright light began to dimmer again, and the red light went away. As we sat there, I remember there was one point in which the light was gone completely, and we couldn't see it anymore, but then it lit up again. We watched it as it went higher and higher into the sky. It sat in the exact same spot for the rest of the night until we went to bed. If any other person didn't see what we saw and just looked up in the sky at the moment, they would have thought it was a little star because of what it looked like. A little dim flickering star up in the night sky. This experience will stay with my mom and I for the rest of our lives. I have always believed in UFOs, but my mom, on the other hand, has not. She doesn't believe in UFOs, ETs, or even the paranormal. She is a "I'll believe it when I see it" type person. And after tonight, she wholeheartedly believes that we are not alone in this universe. A few times throughout the video we shot, you can clearly hear us saying, "It's just a helicopter." Then, "No, it's not." We were in denial, and we don't know what the heck the thing was. It was definitely not a plane or a helicopter. There were planes flying throughout the sky while we were watching the UFO. They looked nothing alike. All in all, my mom and I know what we saw last night, and no one can take that experience away from us.
Bravo, Brad. That was great.
There you go. A dramatic reading.
I liked your interpretation of it. That was awesome. Did a good job.
Well, thank you.
I was lost in your words.
I'm going to start a books on tape career.
Sweet. Sign me up. I still have a cassette player in my car.
Nice.
I got a
double cassette player and recorder in the garage.
We're all set.
Booyah.
I also liked the words that they spelt wrong. Now I can't find them, but there were some
Tears of Freight.
Freight, yes. There was that one. But then there was also another one. Where was it? Oh, now I can't find it.
Shoot. There were times where I may have paused, and that's because I was trying to kind of interpret or maybe rearrange some of the wording so that it read a bit better. Some of the English was kind of spotty in it. I'm sorry, not the English, the grammar, the usage of the words was questionable in parts. But
well, you
we
did
made
a,
it work.
You did a great job, Brad.
Well, thank you.
That was one of the best sightings that we've ever had, I think.
Well, I think the author, the witness to the event, definitely gave me a lot to work with on that.
Next time, interpretive dance.
I'll have to have an outfit. It's the only way I'll do interpretive dance.
Let's hope it's
a specific outfit too.
Let's hope it's interpretive river dancing. That would be cool.
Well, you know, we'd have to put a hard floor in this room because you wouldn't be able to hear
anything.
Yeah. You'd freak the cats out if you're, yeah.
Accidentally step on their tail. Chaos. Yeah.
Then you get howling and clog sounds of
that's a mess.
Shoes on hard foot. Yeah, it's a nightmare waiting to happen.
The witness seemed very enthusiastic.
Absolutely.
They were just loving. Well, they were fearful, but they were also just enjoying the experience, it sounds like.
As they said, they were truly in awe, and that's the only way that you can really describe that. I think. We're the Else Nerds.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockety, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
All right, Inessa, what is it that you watched, listened to, played, made, whatever, involving aliens or extraterrestrials of some kind?
I was putzing around in the App Store and I came across, well, one, I'm a fan of pinball games and pinball machines, but, you know, I don't really have any room for a pinball machine in the house. So I did the next best thing. I downloaded an app. And it is Aliens versus Pinball. So it, as written in the description, it combines three exciting pinball tables into one terrifying game inspired by the Alien franchise.
Whoa.
Yep. So you join Ellen Ripley as she confronts the Alien Queen and helps the Colonial Marines eliminate LV-426's alien infestation on the Aliens pinball table. The first... which right now I only have the one pinball table, but you're able to, they have in-app purchases to unlock other layouts. So the first one that they give you access to is Alien versus Predator. And there's just so much going on that pinball table. It's ridiculous. You've got Predator, which is kind of cool because at some point you hear someone go, "He's gone berserk." And then you get the infrared mode. So you have like the pinballs that are glowing like an orange color. So you have to like, it looks really cool. I highly recommend checking out this game, if not just for the graphics of the table, like the layout and everything. And then you've got xenomorphs periodically will kind of like pop up and grab your pinball and hold it for a bit and then throw it in another direction. And yeah, it's, you know, typical pinball game where you sometimes end up with like two or maybe three pinballs at a time going, and then it's even more chaotic because you've got lights going and bells dinging and everything. But I don't know. I really enjoy it. So I say if you're a fan of pinball and you are a fan of the franchise, you check out the Aliens versus Pinball app. It is for free on Android and Apple, so iTunes store.
No Windows phone?
I don't know.
no BlackBerry?
Who uses a Windows phone and a BlackBerry? I mean, really?
I'm kidding. No.
It's probably not available on BlackBerry.
What was that other?
Still around?
What was that other iOS or that other operating system that was? It was on one phone.
Oh, are you talking about like the Palm OS?
No. Well, there was Palm OS, but then there was something else too. Oh, I forget now. Never mind.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, it might be available on Windows, but definitely on Android and Apple iTunes.
Is it more alien or more pinball? Or mix like a 50-50?
The screen looks like a big pinball machine.
Okay.
So, and in the background, you've got like the xenomorph, like the alien queen, like her head there. But on the left side of the screen, since, like I said, you start out with Alien versus Predator. So on the left side, you've got the Predator. On the right side, you've got the alien. And then you've got both kind of scattered throughout the pinball machine. So,
Yeah.
All right.
There's a lot going on. And sometimes you can kind of lose where the ball goes. So you're like, where'd it go? And you've got all these, like I said, there's a lot of colors and flashing and whatnot, but it's cool. It's fun. I've played other pinball games that are a little less flashy, although still, honestly, my favorite pinball game is probably Pokemon Pinball for the Nintendo DS. So, Game Boy Advance, actually.
All right.
So, anyway, there you go. Pokemon Pinball. Woo! Not even alien related.
Okay, so how many flying saucers does this bad boy get?
I'd say like 3.5 out of 5.
Whoa! That's a good... Hang on. I got things falling down here.
I'm like, what's going on? I can't...
Dave was actually literally blown away.
I was.
It's like, wow.
I'm like, that's a great score. Holy cow. Okay.
I was like, huh. Thought you'd be disappointed. It wasn't higher. But no, I think 3.5. It would have been a little higher, but I tend to, like I said, lose track of the ball from time to time. But it is still very much an enjoyable game. And I suppose one day if I am bored, I might end up purchasing the other tables, as it were. But yeah, I've actually, thinking about it, I do have another pinball game or two on different platforms that I could also recommend, but those will be future picks.
All right.
I like pinball games.
Sounds like it. You have a history of pinball love.
Yes. And if people happen to be, on a pinball-related note, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I think it's like March or April, there's this pinball machine convention, and it's like totes amazeballs, yo.
Totes.
Like, for real.
Totes,
you don't even know. You pay your admission fee, and you go, and people will bring their pinball machines. You can go and play them as many times as you want, and they've got like tons of different ones. And if you have a pinball machine that needs repair or needs a part that you're working on restoring, they've got parts. So, like I said, it's amazing.
It sounds like a commercial for this thing.
I know. I forget when it is, though. I've gone one time, and I've always wanted to go back. But someday.
All right. So, I was abducted by aliens.
What?
Not me.
Oh.
Oh.
That's the title of the video I watched earlier today.
I was going to have to probe you for more questions, Dave.
Oh. I see what you did there. All right. It's a mini documentary from the BuzzFeed Blue YouTube channel. I have no idea what BuzzFeed Blue is. I suppose I could have gone to the channel and looked at the description, but I just assumed that it was BuzzFeed. That's where they pumped out their videos on YouTube, was just this channel, but I could be wrong. Who knows? Anyways, it's just basically a document, not really a document. Well, yeah, I suppose it's a documentary. Just a guy's interviewed. He talks about his experience being abducted by aliens or something that could be not aliens, but it's very convincing that it is aliens. He had this experience when he was a child, sleeping over at a friend's house, and he remembers looking over and his friend freaking out, saying that his eyes were completely black. And then a moment passed, he looked over again, and he was like, "What? Don't freak out. Don't, because you're going to wake your parents up, because it's, you know, late at night." It was like midnight or something like that. And then he realized that it was 6 o'clock in the morning. He had 6 hours of missing time. Like, he was, one instant it was midnight talking to his friend, and the next instant it was 6 a.m. And all that time was gone, missing. He had no idea what happened. And then later on in his life, he got hooked up with a hypnotherapist, and they did the old regression therapy. Regression, is that the right term?
Yes.
Regression therapy. And the person that did it is a specialist in not luring or not leading his patients. He lets the patients lead him, and basically he will not get them to reveal something that they will not reveal by themselves. He just listens to them, which I like, because we've talked about this before, Anessa, where we think that it's kind of phony when the therapist is saying, kind of putting thoughts into their head that aren't necessarily there.
Right, like the leading questions, like, where was the light? Like, he didn't see, he saw a light.
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like this person genuinely would put them under hypnosis and let them just tell the story without leading them on or you know, giving them cues or whatever. And he went into great detail about being on this, what he thought was a ship. He wasn't sure for sure because he never saw the outside. But there was one moment or one point where he's in this room and gravity just disappears and he's just floating. And he floats way, way, like he goes somewhere else. And there's this building, he said, was the tallest building he'd ever seen. So the only thing I was thinking was maybe they transported him somehow to another location where this building was, somewhere in the galaxy or somewhere in the soul. You know, somewhere else, not on this Earth. And then he has some other, he talked about medical instruments coming from the ceiling and being constrained, or his arms were restrained, but there was no restraints. They were just kind of like a force field was keeping his arms, kind of, you know, like he was on an examination table. And they did all kinds of things where they went into his nose and went into his ear and all this other stuff. And he only talked about the one experience, so I'm not sure if he kept on being abducted, which is the case a lot with people that have been abducted by aliens. They get abducted over the course of their lifetime, so I'm not sure if that was the case for this guy.
Right.
But I thought it was interesting. It was about 12 minutes long, so it's very, very short. So if you have not enough time for a full documentary, then you'll enjoy this 12-minute documentary called I Was Abducted by Aliens. It's also, it's not just on the BuzzFeed Blue channel, it's also on their website. So just search I Was Abducted by Aliens, BuzzFeed, and you'll find it.
I figured out what the blue is.
Okay.
So according to the interwebs, videographers are divided into three teams, red, blue, and yellow, and they playfully talk trash one another and hold separate weekly meetings to generate ideas. Hmm. And each person aims to make two videos a week. So there's... Yeah, like it says BuzzFeed yellow, tasty, short, fun, inspiring, interesting videos from BuzzFeed. So,
oh, neat.
Yeah, they compete with each other to come up with ideas and make videos, a couple of videos a week.
You know, I had a feeling it was that was the case. Like I had a feeling,
yeah.
For some reason in my head, I'm like, that sounds like team affiliations. Team
players. Yeah, I mean, like red team, blue team.
Yeah.
Yellow team.
Neat. All right.
You should team.
Let's move on to Brad's pick. Brad, what do you got? Oh, hang on. I didn't give it a rating. I'm going to give this 3.5 out of 5 flying saucers.
Nice.
My pick is a YouTube video that is titled Strange Creature, Alien Caught on Tape, Most Amazing Paranormal Documentary.
No way.
Most amazing?
Most amazing.
Oh my God.
It is basically a montage of videos that other people have posted. It isn't a documentary. There are occasional bits of text that are thrown on, you know, like portions of the video that is paused, and actually it's 42 minutes, but it loops. So you get to see it twice. So it's actually about 20 some minutes, about 22 minutes. It's very disappointing. The imagery is very interesting, but the videography, even if you turn it up, turn your viewing up to HD at 720 at the lowest level of HD, the videography that was taken, not the final video that you're seeing, those videos are at such poor quality that it's grainy and it's hard to see anything worthwhile. So, it's disappointing. It's not really a documentary at all. It's just random bits of not just aliens, but they have like a picture of a zombie. They have all sorts of weird stuff, and it's a mess, and it is definitely not a documentary. I give it one flying saucer. Oh. I think that's the lowest rating I've given anything I've watched.
I think you're right.
It is a video of sadness.
A video of sadness. Did you cry?
I did cry a little bit.
Oh.
I cried tears of freight.
You throwback. All right. So in review,
calling it back.
Strange creature, alien caught on tape? ? Most amazing paranormal documentary ever? ? Brad gave that a one flying saucer. I was abducted by aliens, a short documentary from BuzzFeed Blue. Gave that 3.5 out of 5 flying saucers. And Anessa's Alien versus Pinball app game, you gave it 4 out of 5?
3.5.
3.5 out of 5. All right.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe. Or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
Before we get out of here, final thoughts. As always, Brad, you go first on these things.
I believe that, we got stymied with bad weather, so we weren't able to see Rogue One. So next Monday, or this coming Monday, I guess, to be more specific, we will be going to see Rogue One.
So last week's episode, you lied.
Well, we had every intention, but we got 6 to 8 inches of snow, and it kind of it crippled the city.
It was like 8.6 is what we got. And I mean, I don't get out of work till about 6. And then by the time we get to dropping Alex off and then driving across town, it's like rush, rush, rush. And, you know, snowy weather, slick roads, you don't really want to rush.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It was not
so
good.
It's not so much that we lied. It was just Mother Nature got in the way.
I'm just giving you guys a hard time.
And, I mean, we live on a kind of a side street off of a main drag. And with the snowplows actually buried the entrance to our street. So I have an all-wheel drive SUV that I drive. I was able to get through it. All right. I slowed down a bit getting through it, but I managed to help a poor woman who lived in an apartment complex kind of kitty corner from our house because she was just dead stuck in her medium-sized sedan. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. But anyways, yeah, it was brutal. It was ugly. So
yeah, there were multiple cars that got stuck out front of our house, and when I pulled onto the street and I saw this one vehicle stuck, I'm like, please don't be stuck in front of the driveway. Please don't be stuck in front of the driveway. And she just made it past the driveway. So I pulled the car into the driveway and pulled it into the garage. And then I had to go buy a new snow shovel. So that was part of my adventure home because ours had broke the day before. And so yeah, myself and the neighbor tried to help the lady, but her tires were just not having it. She eventually abandoned the car and just walked home.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. In the last week, I've gotten my car stuck, not in snow, but I had parked in we have two cars now. We have two vehicles. So my wife parks in our spot, and I have to park on the street. So I had parked on a day when it was really slushy and like wet. Mm-hmm. And we had a really like a cold spell, like where it got super, super cold. So everything froze over and I basically got frozen to place. Like, so I had, it was like a couple day process where it was, I was trying to get it out myself. And then finally, the second day, I was out there with a shovel and like sidewalk salt and the whole nine yards. And somebody took mercy on me and asked if I could, if they needed my help. And they had some tow ropes and they pulled me out. And that was nice.
Oh, nice.
And then my battery died also last week.
So. I know the feels. Mine died when I got back from Texas. It was a couple days after I got back, went to the grocery store. Had to leave the car there because it wouldn't start.
Man, winter. Winter is a tough animal, tough beast.
The struggle is real.
All right, Brad, what's your final thought, sir? Oh, no, Brad already went. Anessa, what's yours? You got one? No?
The winter struggle is real. Okay. That's my final thought.
All right, we'd like to thank Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome. You can find it at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol, also to Retward von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing music called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. The Caravel, thecaravel.net. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye!
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCASTS.com.